So on a conference doing services for Windows in a general sense, printing should not be neglected, and I don't think that I have to really introduce Kurt Pfeifler. All those who have been here last year have seen his talk last year, and he's going to tell us a bit about what happened with CAPS and Samba and how we configure Samba to have printer drivers, CAPS printer drivers to Windows, get CAPS printer drivers to Windows.
Okay, thanks, Volker.
Sorry. By the way, we put some sheet on each of the seats on the tables. That's for the next talk. Fotis asked us because he feared that his nice graphics wouldn't be readable on the screen, so it's for the next talk. Sorry, good.
Okay, for those who don't know me, some start calling me, naming me the CUPS Evangelist. That's because when CUPS was released for the first time, nearly 4 years ago, I was one of the first beta testers and have remained so since with every new release. I'm also working currently on a book about network printing, obviously with CUPS as one of the main topics in there. My expertise about network printing and CUPS is more or less from a user's and an administrator's point of view. I'm not a coder, I'm not a programmer. I can, of course, read the comments in the code. So, the problem with CUPS is that it is still very much unknown. It is different from print systems in Unix, which were used before. It's based on a new network printing protocol, the Internet Printing Protocol, IPP. And most people who have got it working are happy, and it's a black box for them. Once they are in trouble with any problem, they don't know how to start. That's often also seen on the Samba mailing lists. Unfortunately, even the most recent, otherwise excellent printed Samba documentation books is really neglected and about CUPS, and on some pieces even plain wrong. So here is probably a good opportunity to do away with some of the misconceptions. CUPS is now the most used printing system on Linux, at least for new installations, because most distros have now it as their default printing system. Red Hat is the last one, and I'm not sure did they release the latest thing. Anyway, it's in their beta, or maybe even in the release. They have CUPS now. So it's time to start and understanding what's going on. Because in Germany, for instance, a lot of public government bodies are planning to migrate away from Windows NT. Maybe to Windows 2000, but also maybe a lot of them to Linux. And they want to have print services there, and they want to have CUPS there. And we need experts how to configure it and how to make the best of it. For CUPS to work, you don't need a lot of setup in the CUPS configuration files. CUPS is per default linked against the CUPS Samba is per default linked against the CUPS libraries. So you actually need only two settings. Printing is CUPS and printcap is CUPS to have it work. And most people don't read man pages, although the smb.conf is one of the best I've seen and one of the most verbose. But in there, you would read that it's if you've got CUPS and if you've got these settings, it's any manual set print command is ignored, because Samba knows already how to print, because it's linked against the CUPS API. So some people want to have manually set print commands because they do some special things. They have to change this setting and tell Samba to ignore what it knows about CUPS and maybe set it to printing is sys5. Anyway, I said these are the two settings you need. I lied a bit, because most people use printer drivers, native printer drivers on the Windows clients. Like if they've got no PostScript printers, of course those drivers will send something different from PostScript to the Samba server. And Samba will pass it to CUPS, either with a manually set print command or with a built-in print command. CUPS, per default, doesn't accept every file to send to the printer. CUPS only accepts what it knows to be printable files or files it can handle and convert to printable files. There are two files which configure the known files to CUPS. The mime.types file defines the rules how CUPS autotypes an incoming file, and the mime.conf file lists all filters which might be used to any known file type. So CUPS is able, from this rule set, to build a filtering chain. Depending, of course, the target printer, you need a different end format of the file conversion. So it builds on startup every filtering chain it might need in future printing from the information it's got in its configuration files, which includes, of course, different printers, which might different target formats. Now, every file format it doesn't have a rule for to recognize is MIME typed as application octet stream. And CUPS doesn't print application octet stream to a printer. But the Windows printer drivers send binary data, and CUPS will not by default print this. This is a security feature to prevent denial of service attacks. But of course, if you want to have a raw spooler for Windows print files, you need to tell CUPS that it should accept those files. And that's why you have to edit the two files. And right at the end of these two files are the two lines which allow CUPS to print every file to the printer. So these are the settings you need to have a very simple CUPS spooler with no additional advantage to traditional spooling systems, apart maybe from the web interface, which for some people is quite nice. And I think most of you have already seen it somewhere. Now, this is of course not what you would limit a CUPS print server to. Because when we look at NT printing in a purely NT environment with NT clients and an NT print server, you will see there are two possible paths how you could process a print file. The first stage of data when you print from NT is a file type called enhanced metafile. Now you can do this, the processing of this file, either on the client, then you have the execution of the driver on the client side. If it's a PostScript driver, the driver will generate PostScript from the EMF. If it's a PCL, it will generate PCL, whatever. Then you send it to the print server, and the print server converts, doesn't need to convert it, it sends it to the printer. But the second possibility, and that's used quite often, is that the client sends the EMF to the server, and the server is executing the driver and is on the server side processing the file, and only there generating PostScript, PCL, whatever. And Samba or Unix or any Unix, no Unix pooler can mimic this second behavior. There's no possibility currently to take EMF, Windows EMF input data and convert it into a printable file. So we need to think of another trick if we want to have the features like the server is processing the print data. I have a few flowcharts here. Oh, unfortunately, it's not all visible. I'll make it a little bit smaller. Here you see how a single box is printing. You heard about the GDI, the graphical device interface. Well, that's the basic API for on Windows to display data either on screen or later on paper. That's the foundation of it. The GDI is outputting data for display on screen, as well as when we look at the printing for display on paper. And on Unix, we lack this common foundation. You can see it when you try to print things that it looks very different very often on paper than it looks on screen. This goes back to decades ago, a stage where the X.org or one of its predecessors, when they defined how the X window system should work and what its responsibilities should be, they did not want to take over responsibility for printing too. They limited themselves to the responsibility for the display on screen. So that's where it comes from, that every application in Unix is responsible to generate their own print data if they want, if it's an application that wants to print. Most applications produce PostScript. Anyway, back to Unix, that's the raw data flow through a print server. A server here is only used to have one common access point to the printer, and not 20 or 50 or more clients who go directly to the printer with peer-to-peer printing to have a central spooler. And this is the thing, how it works when you have a print server which is executing the driver. Here you have the comparison of the flows. Now, on to PostScript processing. PostScript is what most applications in Unix generate when they want to print. PostScript, if you send it to some printers, will be printed as the PostScript code. You will see a lot of text and you won't understand it, and it doesn't look like what you want. Because PostScript needs to be interpreted and needs to be processed into bitmaps which appear on paper, which are used by the marking engine of the printer to put pixels on paper. You have it with a PostScript printer like this. The host machine is sending PostScript and the printer is doing the interpretation if it's a PostScript printer. That's the easiest way. With non-PostScript printers on Unix, if we want to print to them, we need to do the processing of the PostScript on the host machine. And that's what GoScript is doing. I've read quite often that GoScript is the PostScript implementation of Unix. And it's a bit wrong, because it's not a PostScript implementation. It's a software implementation for a PostScript raster image processor. That would be the correct thing. Of course, GhostScript can do a few more things than just process PostScript. It can also convert into PostScript if the input file is not yet PostScript, etc. But that's too much details now. One of the real strengths of CAPS is that it's got a built-in PostScript rip also. And the filters and the MIME types I talked before are set up in a way that it is possible to send a lot of different print data to the spooler, and the spooler will convert it first into PostScript because that's the central format, like a hub, the PostScript will then be converted into the printable format for the target printer, because different printers have used different formats. Now, this is what CAPS has is not a fixed set of rules. You can plug in your own filters. You can define your own MIME types if you know a good rule to recognize a certain type of file and you want to have a certain thing done with it before it goes to the printing system or to the printer. You can put that in. If you know a little bit about CAPS, it's very easy. One example is, and I will show it later probably if there's enough time, is the PDF generating backend, where you can say you want to have all clients, you want to give all clients the option to create PDF on the network, and the PDF will be saved in a Samba share, and the clients will be able to retrieve it, or you could even send email or do other things with it. A few things which are important to understand later what the PostScript drivers on the Windows side we are going to use, how they work and what's the difference. Volker mentioned it. There's now, since a few months, a CAPS PostScript driver for Windows clients. It's starting from Windows NT 2000 XP. It doesn't work for 95, 98. For those, you still need to use the Adobe PostScript drivers. CAPS knows two MIME types of PostScript. One is the generic PostScript, application PostScript, and that's the rules how it recognizes those. Well, the rules are very simple. It's got a suffix of AI or EPS or PS, or it has a string at the very beginning with offset zero of a percent exclamation mark, and this other string, which is another encoding another possibility to have a magic string at the beginning of PostScript. And then there's the other MIME type. It's called Application Vendor CAPS PostScript. And this is not the complete rule set. It goes over a few lines if you read it in the original. But there are applications which send not a PostScript which starts with a percent exclamation mark, but they send a so-called PJL header in front of the PostScript. Normally, this means this file is ready to be sent to the printer. There's nothing to be done because all the commands to control which tray of paper to be used, or if it's duplexed, or if it's folded like this one, it's already in the file. CAPS can't do anything. So these two MIME types, of course, need a conversion filter, which is converting the one into the other. The first MIME type, application PostScript, is plain PostScript without any device-specific things in it normally. What you want with the file to be done, duplexed or the green paper from Tray 4, is still on the command line. And a printer doesn't understand the command line, so the PS2PS filter is injecting the appropriate PostScript or other commands into the file, and only then it is print ready and gets tagged as application vendor CUPS PostScript. So there's one problem with PostScript drivers on the Windows side. Most drivers, many drivers provide files which are already print ready. And that means CUPS can't do anything. The PS2PS filter is doing accounting, it's doing page selection, it can count the pages and write it into a log file for accounting purposes. It's doing NUP and a few other things. And all these features won't work with those files. And those files are produced by Adobe drivers. Well, that's not bad, because they should do it. That's what the PPD asks them to do. Now, CUPS people have developed another driver. It's not a complete rewrite. No one in the world is able to do that without a lot of money. They used the Microsoft PostScript driver as a starting point. If you happen to have a license of Visual Studio, you could, up until last September, download the Windows NT device developer kit, and this had included the source code for the Microsoft PostScript driver. And you had also the right to use that and develop your own driver from it, because you had licensed Visual Studio. That's what the CUPS people did. They can't release the complete source code, but they released the diff. So if you have got Visual Studio, you could have a look and compile yourself. Anyway, they used that, and they made things different. So this driver won't inject a PGL header in front of the file. Instead, it will write those PGL commands and disguise them in the sort of special commands. These commands are tagged with a line called, no, that's wrong. That's a tuple. It's called CUPS job ticket. No, I didn't quote it. No, that line is correct. Anyway, it has a similar line to that at the beginning of the PostScript file after the second line, and it's tagged CUPS job ticket and has then the PGL header files, header commands. This means when it arrives at CUPS, it will be going through the normal filtering procedure. It will go through PS2PS, and PS2PS will restore the originally intended PGL header, so the printer understands it again. And you've got now the best of both worlds. You have got PostScript sent from the clients, and you've got a central spooler and a network RIP, which can send jobs to all different sorts of printers, and you have central accounting, and you have control, you have quotas, you have all sorts of things you probably want to have in a network and provide a service for your clients. What can you do if you've got a problem? Of course, you can debug it. How do you do it? Don't use log level debug 2, because you will be drowned in messages first. Debug level, log level debug will do at the beginning. And with this information I gave at the beginning, with the filters and the MIME types, you will probably already be able to start and understand what CUPS writes into its log files. when you debug. You will understand why it starts filters, you will understand why it says auto-typing to an incoming file, and you will see which filter is failing, if a filter is failing, and you could then go down and drill deeper. Now, when the Windows clients should use PostScript drivers, there are three possibilities how you install the drivers on the clients. You can use the method which was introduced with Samba 2.2, the add printer wizard on the client, and upload the driver through that mechanism. You could use the RPC client command line utility to do everything manually. You need to read a lot of man pages and understand a lot of background to get it done. The app driver should have 3Ds, I see here. And the third thing is, with CAPS, you can use the utility, the convenience utility, CAPS at SMB. The first two options you can use with every spooler you have. The third is only for CAPS. After that, the driver files are on the server, on the CAPS server, on the Samba server, and you can install them per point and print on the clients. Now, the Adobe driver, I already explained a bit about it. Here's a summary. When you look at a PostScript file, because you need to debug it, you will probably see this file, these lines at the beginning of a file, and you'll see this file is not going through a PS2PS filter on CAPS. It will be sent to the printer directly. Where do you get the PostScript drivers for CAPS? It was a bit hidden for a few weeks. I got some phone calls from people who said, I don't find it. But that was an accident. It's now more obvious again if you go to the website and download the latest release candidate 1 for CAPS 1.1.19. The files are always have a package name of CAPS Samba version TAGI set. I didn't mention a few other things, and this will be added to in the future versions of this driver. Here you see page label, job billing, job priority. These are IPP job attributes, and the CAPS driver will support more standard IPP job attributes. One of the most important ones is that you could tell the client could tell the spooler not to send the file to printing immediately, but to keep it on hold or send it to print at a certain time. In a big network, well, you might have a central printing department. You don't want to have 100 users printing directly to these one or two big, huge, mammoth printers. You have got a few operators who load the green paper, the yellow paper, what's needed, and they manually have to release the job when they are ready. So the clients need to send the files tagged with an IPP job attribute, job hold until is indefinite. And this is what the CAPS driver is going to support. I'm now going to do a live show of this CAPS at SMB utility, what it does, and explain a few more things about it. Anyway, what you will be seeing now is a verbose output of this command and translated into plain English. It would be that, well, no, I don't do it. Folger indicates I've only a little time left. So,
would suggest a larger font. Can you do that?
Sorry?
I would suggest a larger font. Can you do that?
I can't. No, I couldn't move the mouse here. You don't see everything? Okay, anyway. I'll export the driver of this PDF creator, and I've tagged it with an additional C. You will see later why. And I can tell you my root password at the present time is root, because you will see it on this output. Now, what happened was, this command has retrieved the PPD, the PostScript printer description file, from CUPS. CUPS might be even a different host from the local host. You can use this command with an H, and a capital H for a Samba host, and a non-capital, a small H. Lowercase h for the CUPS host, and it would, over the network, retrieve the PPDs, would use its local Adobe or CUPS files. I've got the Adobe here currently, unfortunately. And then what it does, it is, after that, it uses SMB client to put the file into the print dollar share. The print dollar share is the special name share where every client expects to find the driver files. After that, it uses an RPC client command to tell Samba these files there are driver files. Because some people tried to, when CUPS at SMB failed, they tried to manually copy it over and expected it to work, but it won't work if you just copy files there. You need to tell Samba these are driver files. And the RPC client at driver command does so. But that's not yet enough. You need, after that, to have to tell Samba these driver files belong to this printer. They need to be associated with this printer. So that's the RPC client set driver command. And you need for all these stages to have successful messages like this one. And once you've that, you are ready on the client to use the driver. We go into the network neighborhood to what happened? Probably I don't have an address anymore. Sometimes it happens. Because after I had it in sleep mode, I don't get immediately the connection again. I don't have a network connection at the moment. Time is up. Sorry.
I know that these things can fail miserably when doing live demonstrations. Those who are interested in seeing that should probably nail him down after this talk, and maybe during lunch, and give him a bad lunch or something like that. So I would really suggest to ask the audience for questions now, and if there are any. Yeah.
You had to enter the root password when you did that at printer command on the command line. Why is that necessary? Is it the RPC client command or the SMB client command which needs the root password?
You need the root. I need the root password for the connection to Samba. If you have got another kind of authentication, this one will be used.
I think what you need is a printer admin account.
Sorry?
I think what you need is somebody be able to write to the print dollar share and a printer admin account.
Yes.
Jeremy can tell more about that.
Yes, you need
somebody who is able to set the add driver command.
Oh, yeah. You have to set the add driver command.
Yeah.
That's more
of
the case with the
SMB.com.
So you need to be root if you want to set.
Okay, we need root. Okay.
Possible to use the admin keyword in the share print dollar, so I can make a different printer manager to set him setting up these drivers.
Come on. Sorry to take away the talk from you, Kurt, but.
The add driver command has to be set in SMB.com.
It's a big client add driver that we're talking about. The RPC client add driver.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the add driver parameter in SMB.com.
No.
Add driver can be done as printer admin, yes, that's right. That's, yeah, you should be able to do that. Because all it is writing into the TDB files. It has to have write access into, I think it's the print dollar share. So this is one of the things that I've worked on about 6 months ago. It works. I haven't looked at it since. So to give you the definitive answer, I'd either have to look at the docs or look at the code.
A lot of details is in that pamphlet, and I've been told there's a few are left out there. One of the things is, if you've got in SMB.conf the setting of map to guest is bad user, you often get connected as guest and you don't want to be guest at that moment. And then there's, I think it's a bug on the Windows client side. Once they have had a connection as a guest, they won't try to reconnect as any other user. You could try as often as you want. You need to kill all connections. You need to close the Explorer. And sometimes I even had to reboot in order to make it work. Because even closing the Explorer file, somewhere the client said you can't reconnect to the same server under a different user account. That's the error message you get. And when you look on the wire or when you look in the Samba log files, there's not even a single byte transferred from the client to the Samba server. It doesn't even attempt. It brings just the error message. And you think you get denied access by Samba, and that's not true. So that's one of the things. When you start doing it, take out the map to guest get that user, so you will always be asked for a password and an account name, and then you are sure what you are connected as. Otherwise, if you make one little mistake, you get connected behind your back as a guest user, and you can't reconnect as a root or printer admin user again.
Is it possible to do page accounting with raw printers?
No.
Okay.
That's by definition a raw printer file shouldn't be touched in any way. Probably you could hack something, but no one did so far. So no, it's not possible at the moment.
I have a question regarding the details of the driver download. How do I put the CUPS driver and its PPDs on the Samba server, and do the Windows clients automatically download the PPDs and correctly display all options for that printer?
No. It downloads the PPD as is. The default as CUPS is currently using them, and that's what you see, for instance, in the web interface when you or you could configure through the web interface that writes directly in the PPD, which is in ETC CUPS PPDs. And this one will be transferred. This file will be taken to and transferred to the client. So they will get these defaults first. When you want to change that, that's what I probably can show, but just with the local driver, because I don't have the network connection currently. We take this local driver. Now, you might be used to this dialog from Windows NT. You've got these two things. You've got context menu print settings, and you've got these properties. You might use that because you're used to from NT. Use that dialog, do your settings, and be disappointed that it won't be saved, and it won't be saved for all users. So, okay, you say, that's not the one. I try this. I find another dialog here, also print settings. And you could probably set things here. It's also not the correct one. Again, properties. And then you see these different tabs on top. And there's the general tab here. That's what opens at first. And then you see the printer settings. And you try again. It won't work. You need to discover that here is another tab. And here is standard values or defaults. I don't know what it is in English. And here is another dialog. It looks the same. And this one will do it.
Thanks, God, for the first. Now, I've seen there are some more questions. We now have a little problem. We are 7 minutes late. And I recently got a call that Peter Gunton is not he's not able to come. So I would suggest the following. Because we have ordered the lunch at 12, we have time. One talk has just been dropped. We
I
have
can
time
troubleshoot
now.
Here.
My problem is we have another talk, and I think we wouldn't be able to do it until 12. So I would suggest to have a next talk now and put Kurt on the podium there again.
Okay, I show the driver download then. Okay.
Later, so keep your questions in mind, and I would like to proceed with photos now. We will have Kurt again later, because obviously there are many questions on printing. Okay.